for a warm welcome.
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Erica and I am an alcoholic. Tom asked me to speak a couple months ago, maybe 3 months ago, and I had to reschedule so many times because of one thing and another. And when I realized it was today, I also realized that where I work, we had committed to do the Mac and Cheese Fest at the Avila Golf Resort today. But I told Tom, I'll figure it out. I'll make sure that I, you know, even if I have to come straight from there to be here, I'll be here. And while I was there, you know, it's amazing. 2,000 people, if they prepaid for their ticket, spent $50 per person to come to this event, which allowed them to drink all the beer and wine that they wanted and eat macaroni and cheese. It was $75 at the gate. Now, for me, I'm thinking, you know, $4.99 bottom shelf handle of vodka and a 59-cent box of mac and cheese would have been the perfect night for me, and I could have done it for a tenth of the cost. But that's how my head thinks. Anyway, my sobriety date is May 30th, 2007. That's not my first sobriety date, but that is the day that I became willing to do whatever it was that you guys told me to do. It was the day I became willing to do whatever it would take to stay sober. And I have a sponsor whom I use. I talk to my sponsor and I ask for help today. I haven't always been very good at that. I've gotten better because I find that I want to live comfortably and I need help to do so. So the purpose of my being here is to share my experience, strength, and hope, tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And that is a language that only you and I understand. If you go out into the real world and say those two phrases, they look at you like, what do you mean by that? But we get it. We know what we're talking about. And so that's what I'm going to do. I was born way up the road in San Luis Obispo. And to a really nice family. I'm 11 and 12 years younger than my brother and sister. So I was the, you're what, my dad said. But, you know, I was a surprise, but that's okay. I was loved. I felt like I was loved. My brother was not a big fan of me. And I found out later that he really did everything he could to not have me be a part of that family. And you know, we talk a lot about in here about not feeling like we fit in and not feeling wanted. I didn't realize this 5 years ago even, or 6 years ago even, but you know, part of what, besides just being an alcoholic, I think part of what added to that was this constant vibe I got from my older brother that I shouldn't be a part of that family. He told me I was adopted from an Indian reservation, that my name was Linawika Rain in the Face, because every time he told me that, I would cry. I believed that story, and my parents didn't do anything to stop that. But I had, you know, I had a nice family. My mom was Swiss Italian. When my grandma would babysit us on cold mornings, she'd make this homemade eggnog. And if it was a really cold morning, she'd throw a shot of whiskey in there, and she'd give that to my brother and sister and to me, and she'd send them off to school, and never thought anything of it. It was normal in our family, and it worked. It got us warm. When I was 8 years old, since brother and sister are gone to college, my dad, I was kind of the tomboy, and my dad loved to take me fishing and clamming at Pismo, and we still had clams, and he'd put me on the edge with a pitchfork and go out on the sandbar so he could get two limits, because I didn't need a fishing license. And when we'd come into the truck afterwards, he'd give me a shot of Sand Dune Cutty Sark, which was scotch, I later found out, to warm me up. And it worked. And it that's not what made me an alcoholic. It's just that I knew that alcohol was a normal thing and it worked. What was kind of a turning point for me, I think, was that when I left the safety of the school I had been going to through seventh grade and went to another junior high, I suddenly found myself at that awkward age of 12, 13, wanting to make new friends, not feeling like I fit in, and what was I going to do to fit in with these friends? And so I found the popular kids, found out what they were doing, and did it even bigger and better than they did. And that, I think the first time I really got drunk was a party that my parents had taken me with them to some friends of theirs in Arroyo Grande. And while the parents all mingled, the kids went and took all the leftover booze and made a suicide punch out of it. And we drank that. And what I remember about the ride home was that I was throwing up. My mother was saying, "Oh, poor thing, I wonder what she ate." And I hear my dad under his breath saying, "It's not what she ate, it's what she drank." And they put me to bed. The next morning was Easter Sunday, and I didn't have to go to church. They went to church without me, and they came in to check on me afterwards. I was hung over, but they never said a word about it. They knew what I had done, but we never discussed it. It was just kind of swept under the rug. And I knew at that moment that I was going to do this again. I was just going to have to be more careful not to disappoint my parents, because I knew that they were disappointed. But I found this magic elixir that made me really be popular all of a sudden, and that's exactly what I needed at this new school, and it's exactly what I needed to carry me through high school and into college. And, you know, I found that I was a pretty good salesperson, and that made me even more popular. I could, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but drugs are a part of my story. And even in high school, getting a hold of, you know, some reds, whites, yellows, whatever there happened to be, I had the stuff, and so people would come to me, and that made me feel popular and wanted. When I left and went to San Diego for college, this was another way for me to get to know people. And I had aspirations and dreams as a student. I really wanted from a very young age to be a nurse. And I was going to do my general ed at one junior college and then transfer into a nursing program. But I got so busy partying and having a great time that every time it came time for the next step, where it was going to look like it was going to be a little more work, I'd change my major and go, "Oh, I'm going to start over in a different direction," so that now I'm doing the preliminary work again, and I still have time to party. Well, after about 4 or 6 years of this, I noticed that, you know, some of the people that I had been going to school with and knowing from this college environment, they were graduating and they were moving on with their lives, and I wasn't. I wasn't done. The party wasn't over for me, and it actually progressed. It got worse and worse to the point that I ended up driving a getaway car for an armed robber. I ended up, I didn't actually commit the crime, but I parked next to the vehicle while he stole the stuff. I actually, you know, held the gun at the door to make sure that the bad guys didn't come in. And I used a tax return to fly us out of the country because the heat was getting hot for him and he needed out. So I used a tax return to get he and I one-way tickets to Puerto Rico, at which point, and I thought this guy really loved me. I thought he really liked me because this is the kind of denial and fantasy that I lived in. He left me in Puerto Rico. He had another friend there, and he left me, and I was kind of, well, now what do I do? It never occurred to me to be afraid. It never occurred to me to be, that there was something wrong here. It was, okay, what am I going to do next? So the thing that I did next, I knew I had some friends from San Diego that had moved to St. Thomas Island. So I got a pilot and a co-pilot to give me a ride from a dirt field to the main airport in Puerto Rico, had enough money apparently to get on a plane to go from San Juan into St. Thomas. Some guy on the plane offered me a place to stay that night in St. Thomas. Why I didn't get raped, I have no idea. He was just nice enough not to, he asked, but he was just nice enough not to take advantage of me. And the next day I set out to find my friends, Greg and Patricia. And it's a small island, so I spent some time looking around for them and asking around. And again, it never occurred to me that this was unusual behavior. I found them, and they were surprised to see me. What the heck are you doing here? So I convinced them to let me crash on their couch for a couple days. And you know, in St. Thomas, those cruise ships come in. Booze is really cheap down there. But I was really making a valiant effort. I went around, I applied for jobs. I had found a job where I could work as a waitress, and it was going to be a couple weeks before I'd get a paycheck and be able to get a place of my own. So I called Mom and Dad. I said, "Hey, Mom and Dad, here's where I am, and I just need a little bit of money to tide me over for the next couple of weeks till I get my first paycheck, and then I'll be set." And I didn't know at the time, but Greg and Patricia had called my parents also and said, "We don't know what she's doing here. She's out of control, and maybe you better send some help." So my parents, when I called them, agreed to send me an airline ticket back to Santa Maria. And I said, okay, but I figured I'd go to the airport and cash it in, and then I'd have the money I need. Unfortunately, my parents were pretty smart people. They had already thought of that, and so there was no getting money for that plane ticket. It was either get on the plane or not. So with 64 cents in my pocket, I returned to Santa Maria and basically have been here ever since. The party didn't stop then, and it, you know, wherever I go, there I am. So it didn't take me any time at all to find the kind of people that I needed to party with here in Santa Maria. And of course, to make it look good, because it was always really important for me to make you think I'm doing well, I enrolled in school again. Now I've changed my major a third time. I'm working on my third AA degree. But that's because, you know, I'm going to be somebody. So while I was I was living with Mom and Dad, going to school, and one of my teachers suggested that I apply for a job at the Santa Maria Times. Now, understand that at this point, I take it back. I wasn't living with Mom and Dad. I was living in an old orchid. I was crawling distance from Elmer's. I remember that clearly, but I also remember overdosing on cocaine a couple of times, you know, hitting the deck and my roommate having to find me, and kind of, I came back around, but that wasn't enough, you know, that wasn't enough to say stop. I kept this going for, about another four or five years until I did have a job at the Santa Maria Times. It was crazy. I would sleep 2 hours a night, get up, do a line, drink a screwdriver, and go to work and sell advertising. And I looked a really high-functioning alcoholic. I looked like I had it all going on. I had it together. I ended up getting pregnant with my daughter, and that still wasn't enough to get me to stop or slow down. It wasn't until she was about 18 months old that I decided I needed to stop doing drugs. I had this little life that I had with now. I needed more sleep than I was getting, so I told her dad, "Watch the baby, I'm going to sleep." I slept for a week, and when I woke up, I made a cocktail. I knew I couldn't do drugs anymore. I had this addictive personality, but alcohol was socially acceptable. It was normal in my family. That was what we did. We went camping, we drank beer, we made, you know, had margaritas. That's what we did. And I managed to live that way for the next 15, 16 years, And everything looked pretty good. It was still working at that point. It really was. The alcohol was still working at that point. Although, I remember a couple of camping trips where we're sitting around the campfire and I'm noticing that I'm going into the motorhome to take a swig off the bottle because in my head, the people we're drinking with, they can't hold as much alcohol as I can. So they're getting drunker faster than me. So I need to drink more to catch up with them so that we would be on the same playing field. This is my thinking. And I realized it, and then I started to think maybe I had a little bit of a problem with alcohol if I was doing this, but I dismissed that. I really thought, you know, I have always been able to drink more than normal people, so that's just how I have to handle it. Fast forward to about 2003 or so, my family starts to tell me that my drinking is a problem. Now, I'm still showing up to work every day. I don't drink on the job. We've got the big house, the motorhome, the boat, the three cars in the driveway. I'm getting the kids to their soccer games, their baseball games, their ballet, whatever. All the bills are being paid. We're in church every Sunday morning, every Wednesday night. I'm singing in the choir. I am singing in the church choir. Everything looks really good on the outside. My family is saying that, you know, when I get home in the evening and I've had a couple drinks, my personality changes a little bit. You know, I'm not that nice anymore. And if you hadn't said it that way, or if you understood how hard I work, or, you know, I'm working full time, I'm keeping this all together, you don't appreciate me, you know, I deserve a drink at the end of the day, and if you don't like it, you know, leave me alone. So to get them off my back, I said, okay, fine, I'll quit drinking, or I'll cut back. And so for a while, I'd have just two glasses of wine in the evening. That is such torture. That's only a half a bottle, which means the other half of the bottle is in the refrigerator. I know it's in the refrigerator, but I can't drink it because hubby will notice that it's more than that half a bottle's missing. So I got to make that last. So this is pure torture for me, and I think this isn't going to work. So I'm thinking now I can still maintain this illusion. All I need is a little half pint of fortifier in between the sweaters in my closet upstairs. So this way I can have my two glasses of wine while I'm making and having dinner. And oh, wait, I need to run upstairs for a minute, pull off that vodka bottle. And so I'm getting the buzz I need, but everybody's happy, right? Sometimes we'd go out to dinner and so I wouldn't have anything because we were going to go out to dinner and have a couple glasses of wine. Well, of course, I have my fortifier in the sweaters, and I'm good and primed before we get to dinner. And they're going, how does she get so drunk on two glasses of wine, you know? Eventually, I got caught. Well, they found the bottles in between the sweaters. So I said, okay, fine, I'm busted, I give up. I won't do that anymore. I'm going to quit drinking, make you all happy. And, of course, I couldn't do that either. So now, the genius that I am, I put the vodka in the water bottles because now I can drink it in the car between work and home, and the cops don't notice, the family doesn't notice. I think I am just very cool. I've got my gym bag in the car. I never go to the gym, but that's a great place to hide bottles. And so things are not really changing. It's just that I think I'm being sneakier and sneakier. Eventually, what happened was, one evening, I got home first. I'd already had about half pint. I'm feeling great. My daughter comes in. we're talking, things are going great. We're having a nice conversation, and she says something that sets me off. I don't remember what it was, but I suddenly, it was in my full-blown pity party. That's it. You guys would be better off without me. I'll just go kill myself. Up the stairs I go to get the gun, which I knew we had a gun. I didn't know where the bullets were and not clear on how to load the gun, but I was being very dramatic. So my daughter did what she thought was best, and she called 911 and had me 5150. Yeah. So they took me to San Luis, and I woke up in this horrible green room with this very tall nurse named Sue, and I thought, oh, I really don't belong here. So they kept me there, and they put me on the couch and gave me a big book to read, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't know about this. And I finally got a hold of my husband, and he said the only, because on a 5150, they can keep me for 72 hours, and I'm thinking, this is not going to work for me to be here for 72 hours. So he made me agree that if I would go to an AA meeting that night and get a temporary sponsor that day, he would come pick me up. So I said, okay, I'll do that. I'd do anything to get out of there. Took me to my first AA meeting. That was December 14th, 2005. Now, I don't remember. That was up on the Mesa in Rio Grande. I don't remember anything that was said. But I do remember getting this idea, this feeling that there might be some hope for me to be able to stop drinking. Because prior to this, you know, I knew I wanted to stop drinking. And I stood in that closet drinking that vodka right out of the bottle a number of times thinking, I wish I could stop. I want to stop. I know I can't stop. You know, if I could just get my kids to the age of 18, then, you know, my duty is done and it doesn't matter anymore. And, you know, I had no idea how to do this at all. But in that first AA meeting, I realized there might be a way. And so I dove in. I really did. Well, I kind of dove in. I dove in with one foot. I read the book a couple of times. I went to meetings a lot. I could really talk the talk. When, you know, the first time I read the big book in that chapter 3, I knew I was an alcoholic. The thing is that I'm pretty smart, and I thought, you know, if I could read what's, Alcoholics Anonymous had some good stuff to say. I'll read what's in the book, I'll do some of that stuff, and then I'll do the rest of my life my way. And, you know, my husband had told me if I just stopped drinking, everything would be fine. All this dysfunction in our family would go away. So I quit drinking. I really started doing the AA thing. I was talking the talk. I had a sponsor. We kind of did this little halfway, 1, 2, 3 step. She had some issues going on too, so I didn't really ever get around to a fourth step. But part of the problem was my husband, who was not an alcoholic, agreed to not have any alcohol in the house. He was going to have it only in the shop outside. Well, I know, because he had it in the house, and I'm an alcoholic. I could find it if it's in the house. He would pour a drink in the office, you know, all sneaky when I wasn't there, and take it to another location. But if I walked in that room, I could smell alcohol 30 minutes after he'd been in there. So I knew it was in the house, and I thought, I went to set out on an experiment. I had about 5 months of sobriety at this point. Things were not better in our family life. And I thought, you know, I could probably have a drink. So I did. I went to his stash. I took a drink on a Wednesday. And I thought, there you go. See? I can control and enjoy my drinking. I didn't have another drink for a whole nother week. So I thought I had mastered this. Hats off to me, right? So the next Wednesday, I thought, well, if I'm going to have one drink, I might as well have two, because that way maybe I can feel it a little bit. And so I did. I had two little drinks, and then I didn't have any more after that. Not for a whole nother week. But you got to you best believe I was counting the hours to the next week. You know, because normal people don't think about. I mean, we're either drinking or we're thinking about drinking. So you probably all can guess that it didn't take but another week or two for me to be right back where I was, where I'd left off. And I was, for the next year, I was in and out of AA. Thank God that I had a little time in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I knew there was someplace I could go back to. And I would get 30 days and get a chip. And then I'd try to do that two glasses of wine with dinner thing again. Or I'd get 60 days and, you know, think, well, to hell with it, you know. I even started doing an outpatient program through Cottage Hospital. I can't see that clock back there. Through Cottage Hospital, and had 45 days sober. And it was, this time I was going to figure it out. The physiology of alcohol, I was going to figure out how it made my body really react, and by knowing this, I would be able to manage my alcoholism. It was Memorial Day weekend 2007, and I don't know why, I went to the store and I bought a fifth of vodka and I started drinking, and I drank for a 4-day blackout. I managed to be sober, come to enough on the Tuesday. I started on a Thursday, I guess. I managed to have enough wherewithal on the next Tuesday to call my my counselor from this outpatient program and tell him I couldn't come to group that night because I'd been drinking. And the rule was you couldn't drink or use 24 hours before group. And he asked what was going on, and I did my little pity party thing again. Oh, you know, they'd be better off without me. He said, don't say that. I go, well, Greg, it's true. They'd be better off without me. So he did what he had to do. He called my husband, said, go pick her up, take her to the hospital, get her checked out, take her to Cottage. And I went to 5 East at Cottage Hospital, and from there I went to CRC, a rehab in Santa Barbara. And it was at that point that I finally was out of ideas. I had finally conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I had tried every form of experimentation and to prove I could drink like a normal people. I was out of ideas. And I just, at that point, I surrendered. I was scared to death. I had no idea how I was going to be able to live life without drugs or alcohol. I hadn't been sober a day in 35 years. I'd been on at least something for most of my entire life. And how I was going to live, function without alcohol, I had no idea. But I was willing to listen to what you told me to do. And that's where my sobriety began. And luckily, I was able to just... Luckily, I wanted this bad enough that I just focused on my recovery. I did something to promote my recovery each and every day. I got a sponsor who worked. I went through the fourth step right away after rehab because I was desperate. I got through all of the steps rather quickly because I was desperate. I wanted to stay sober. And I just stayed. I went to as many meetings as I could, even though the ex wasn't making it very easy for me. He was still trying to sabotage my sobriety. But I just put blinders on and said, I need to do this for me. Now, this time, it wasn't about fixing the dysfunction in the house. It wasn't about making anything look pretty. It was me. I needed to do this for me. And after I was sober a year, I was able to leave that relationship. And you know what? Life has gotten better. Life is not always easy. In fact, I got a little shitstorm going on right now in my life. But the thing I know today is that when that happens, I call my sponsor. I call other people in Alcoholics Anonymous that understand how difficult it is for me to go through these emotions like normal people. I'm not used to doing that. I'm used to drinking, throwing booze on top of these feelings and numbing the pain with alcohol. I surround myself with people that are willing to be honest with me, that'll call me on my bullshit. I just, you know, just before the meeting, I said, blah, 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 this happened, this happened, this happened. And my sponsor says, well, all you can do is look at you. Well, fuck you. You know, it's true, though. I have to be willing to look at me. And, you know, I'm really, really grateful because I don't want to stay stuck. I don't want to just have, I didn't get sober just to have this boring life. I didn't get sober just to not have any fun. I went to a $50 a head mac and cheese festival today, and, you know, I got to be there for free and watch all these fools spend their hard-earned money eating macaroni and cheese. Anyway, but today, you know, I don't do it perfectly, and I'm not always 100% honest. I don't do it right every day, but what I do is I try to stay connected. I try to practice these principles in all my affairs, and I try to remain teachable. I try to continue to grow. I don't ever want to, I mean, that's what kept me out for so long, was thinking I knew, I had a plan, I could figure this out. I'm just a little bit smarter than you. You know, yeah, that sounds great, but I'm going to do it a little bit different. Today, I don't want to know. I don't want to be the one that knows. I want to be the one that learns. I want to learn something new today and how that can make my spiritual experience, my existence on this planet for this little while, a little more joyful, have a little more joy, have a little more freedom. And one of the other things that I really appreciate today is being able to share this. I love being able to work with other women, and sometimes it's a great distraction for me for not working on myself, but my sponsor will call me on that too, but when it gets to be. But I learn so much when I get to take someone else through the steps, because I get to go through them again and I get to hear my story again through another woman, because it's just amazing how we have so much in common. And I love the big book when it talks about, you know, the people on the ship, the sinking ship. I mean, we really probably wouldn't hang out together otherwise, but we've got this common bond that binds us together for a lifetime. Don't have to like you, but if you call and ask for help, if you need help getting off that bar stool, I will come help you. So anyway, thanks for letting me be here tonight. Thanks for letting me share.
All right.